It's Thursday, March 21st, 2013, and you're listening to episode 295 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 4 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Johan.
And this is Chad.
To give some context to that, we were listening to the Orson Welles recordings, the outtakes of when he was doing the commercials and on one of his fits. And I showed him both the actual recording and then the Animaniac skit where they make fun of it. And the great thing about it is they want to show this absurd cartoonish event. And with the exception of removing the profanities, they just do it line for line from the real thing, because it is already so bad they don't have to embellish it to make a cartoon out of it.
Because that's the fun of it.
Yeah. So I told Pat, I said, for anyone who's familiar with it, you'll get this. For anyone who's not, I'll put a link in the show notes. But when we were setting this up, I said, Pat, when you start, can you emphasize my?
So I did. You. Out.
Who are you? Who are you?
Leave.
Pat, there's a bit of a gonk on that.
What's a gonk? Can you explain to me what a gonk is?
All righty. A couple announcements real quick, and then we are going to get into some gaming goodness. The first one here, I got an email from a guy by the name of Jake who goes by Pinofsky on the forums. And I'm going to put a link to his name in the show notes because I would love it if you guys out there would send him some good wishes. Because on March 28th, Jake is going to be going in for surgery to receive a liver transplant, which is being given by his younger brother, Eric. So if you guys would send him some good wishes, pray for him, whatever fits within your worldview, show him some love and show him what we're all about. Because obviously they're going through a pretty rough time. And while it's a relatively safe procedure, as with any medical procedure, there are some risks involved. So
long recovery. Yeah, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, so we want to show these guys all the love we can. And Eric, you have my absolute respect for being willing to do this for somebody else. You know, he's your brother, and that is an awesome thing you're doing. My hat is absolutely off to you. Fear the Con stuff. All righty. First,
we will sell no tickets before their time.
No, tickets are on sale. FearTheCon.com. We hope
it's
to see you out there.
It's time for tickets to be sold.
I've signed up for all my games.
I've still got some open slots because of the fact that per my thing before, I'm trickling my games out. I do have one up that I think still has some openings in it. In slot one, in case anyone is bringing somebody who's never played a game before, I have an intro to RPGs thing in slot one. Since Chris usually runs that, but he's too old to make it this year. They took away his driver's license until he can retest. So
are you going to still hold up to what you said on Kicked in the Dice Bags? I almost said Dragon's Landing In. I have no idea why.
You know, I may not have to, because if memory serves, that episode got lost. So
did it really?
Yeah, the one we did on Fear the Con?
Yeah.
It got lost.
They didn't tell me that.
They told me that.
What a bunch of jerks. Adam, you're a jerk. But at least we're not Masters Cast.
Two things, though, on Fear the Con. Actually, three things. First off,
his boast was that he was going to run one of my games that I wrote.
Yeah.
And the Jenga Tower and everything.
I will play under one of you under protest.
He's going to do this.
I know. I created a monster.
And no one's going to know what the hell he's talking about.
They're going to have to go out and check the show notes.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I know there are people who will get it, because when I was talking about this on Facebook, several people pointed me to additional Orson Welles insanity. Mm-hmm. So I know I'm not the only person who knows about this.
I will have to point you to the good Orson Welles interview he did. Like, the one.
When he's not out of his mind.
When he's not out of his mind. Total egotist, crazy, bad Orson Welles, yes,
right,
but it's really interesting and it's very good.
All right, so at Fear the Con, first off, we are looking at putting together a Sunday viewing of Iron Man 3, because it releases that weekend. We are not going to repeat the Watchmen debacle of trying to do a late night showing. So if anyone wants to stick around until Sunday afternoon, we will try and organize an early afternoon showing of Iron Man 3, or showing viewing of Iron Man 3. If I actually owned it, could show it. That'd be a very different situation. Yes. Johan, I want to give a shout out to something that you are doing.
Yes.
Because...
Wait, I'm doing something?
Yes, you are.
Crap.
In fact, you even started this. It was your idea, and you started the thread and everything.
Wow.
With the Worldwide Wing Night, it's going to be at the Con Hall this year. Now, not in the main convention hall, but it's going to be in the side rooms. We can open some dividers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for both the Wing Night and then the convention as well, at both, we're serving beer. We want to emphasize, if you have had too much to drink, there is no shame and tracking one of us down, a host down, anybody down, and ask for help getting somewhere. because if you drive drunk, best case scenario is you get charged with the DUI. Worst case scenario is you get in a wreck and you or somebody else or both get seriously injured or whatever. We don't want that. That's not what Fear the Con is about. So if you've been drinking and had a little bit too much, there's no shame in it. Just find one of the hosts or anybody that seems like they kind of know what they're doing and ask, because Johan is working to put together the Sober Drivers Brigade. Yep. Somebody will get you back to the hotel safely. It's a nice area. Your car will be fine in the parking lot.
And there are even a couple of folks who have volunteered to drive your car back for you, assuming you're staying at the hotel, because they are also going to be at the hotel and they are riding there with somebody else. So they'll be available to drive an extra vehicle. So if you drive over there and you're worried about your car, still let us know. There's a very good chance we can find you a driver. And if we can't, there's always a back seat somewhere for you. Right. So. Hopefully it's not Pat's backseat, because that's a little different
because
experience.
Pat has a lot of junk in his
trunk.
It'll
take you a crowbar to get out of there. But yes. Last thing is, I've got some details on the charity that Derek Knudsen is running this year. Mm-hmm. He has the single most guilt-laden charity I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, yes.
Wounded Military Dogs.
They have big eyes and everything.
Yeah, I don't know how you possibly make it's a thing of magic. But I just got all the details on that. I haven't.
These dogs served your country.
These dogs
fought for your freedom
and got hurt doing so.
You didn't do a Pledge of Allegiance in high school. You tell that dog.
These dogs deserve medals.
They do.
Some of them get them.
Some of them get medals.
Yeah. So
they are soldiers.
All jokes aside, this is a real cause. We're not making this up. And this really is,
it's an awesome cause.
Yeah, it's an awesome cause.
It's a wonderful cause.
And I just got the info. I'm going to be putting that together, and I will make a forum post, and I'll cross-pollinate that throughout all of our social media. And I will also give you some more details on that next episode. But I don't have that collated yet. I just want to let you guys know that that's coming. All right, so let's roll right into gaming. The subject we want to talk about this week, and typically we try to knock out two subjects. I don't know what we're going to do at this week, so I think this is a heavy, meaty subject.
After we just got out of a steak place.
Yes.
I know of a place. All right.
never minding.
What we want to cover on today's show is the role of failure in a role-playing game. Let me kind of back up and explain what I mean by the role of failure in a role-playing game.
It's when you roll and fail, right?
Yeah,
it could be. One.
Why isn't Wayne here?
Same reason Chris isn't here, because in order to talk about failure, you have to have some secondary perspective to kind of contrast it against. Whenever you look at most situations in life, obviously human impulses, you want to win. You want to succeed. You want to do well. Yes, I realize there are people out there who are self-destructive or whatever, but generally speaking, when you set out to do something in life, you want to succeed at it. And one of the issues that can come up in a role-playing game is sometimes your party does not succeed. You fail. Now, that failure could come in the form of a botched die roll. You went to fight the big bad and you couldn't roll anything but critical failures, and he wasn't rolling anything but critical success, and failure ensues. It could also come in the form of story choices. You choose to go left when you should have gone right. You miss an important clue, whatever. And what happens is the party ends up having a failure. And one of the things that can come out of this, which is why we want to talk about this, is sometimes people, when they see themselves failing in a role-playing game, particularly if they perceive themselves failing repeatedly, begin to become very, very frustrated. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that changes the fact that there is an important role for failure within a role-playing game. And so I kind of want to attack this subject from several different angles and try to offer some insight both for game masters and for players on recognizing what failure does to actually help your game, but also recognizing when it's gone too far and having some strategies for trying to tamp that down a little bit and keep that from being such a big issue in the game.
There seems like there's two main areas when you're trying to talk about failure in an RPG, and that's mechanical failure and it's story failure. Basically, whether it's a problem with the game or the role-playing, and problem probably isn't the best word to use there, but I guess it's the difference between rolling that one and turning right instead of left or missing a clue. And they're very, very different, both in players' reactions to them and also in how you can solve them. Mechanical failure, that's easy. If somebody is repeatedly failing mechanically, they either don't understand the game or the GM sucks because the GM does not understand the game and is providing them with undoable challenges. And that is a matter of everyone getting a better grasp of the whatever mechanics you use, be it, you know, D&D or Jenga. That one is just a rules understanding, but it can, I've watched that one upset players a lot, and it can cause some bad blood after a while if somebody just does not understand how to act within the system effectively. And so they see everyone else doing all this amazing stuff, and their character just kind of sits there and falls over. The mech falls over every time it tries to back up or whatever it is that is going on. And really, there's not much to do, I think, other than pull them aside and give them a good tutorial. But it's an important thing, and it does have to be done. Otherwise, nothing's ever going to happen, and they're going to get frustrated and quit.
I think you can also expand that to the dice rolling. It's not just the system itself or not understanding it. It can be your Wayne, and you can't, when you need to roll a 15 or better on a 20-sider, he can't roll above a 5.
I'm not, right.
You know, that kind of a thing.
I'm not a superstitious person. And I don't believe in all this dice voodoo magic that people do around tables and all the lucky dice and all this BS. But as a game master, if I need a piece of dramatic tension and I need a character to fail a roll, I have Wayne make the roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time. Because it's a proven scientific fact. Wayne always fails his rolls.
And I know people like that. And I know people who always succeed their rolls, no matter what.
Dan's brother.
I have sat there and watched somebody roll a...
Texas version of failure is a non-critical success.
Yeah. I've watched somebody roll a Method 1 D&D character that got 4 18s.
Oh, my God.
And he can consistently do that. And I remember, disgusting.
Like, for me, I think with most people, I tend to remember failures more often than the successes because the failure, they bother me more. But so for me, it's like, I look at my dice rolling, and I often am frustrated by the fact that I cannot roll what I need, and that is very frustrating to me.
Now, some people would say...
So I think that can be a big part of it, too.
Yeah, some people would say that, though, is, what's it called, perception bias? Selection bias?
It's something like that.
Yeah. Perception bias, I believe.
If you really look at it, it should be statistically equal... Yeah. You know, successes.
Because when you roll, the psychology behind it is you roll. It's like, oh, I did something normal. I did something.
Well, I'll remember the 20s. Like, when you roll a 20, I remember that. But I don't remember the 17 to 19s because those are successes. But I remember all the failures. Like, I'll remember not just the ones.
Failure.
I'll remember,
I
rolled
a 10 below.
I needed a 5 and I rolled a 4. I'll remember that, you know. It's not just a 1.
Well, I am not I am usually a very rational person. I love statistics. I do not believe that statistics apply within 6 feet of an RPG book. There is some sort of weird mathematical warping that occurs as soon as you open a RPG book of any sort. The laws of statistics absolutely do not apply anymore.
Yeah,
it's bizarre.
Laws of physics don't apply either. Have you ever tried to keep a piece of food off of a Palladium book?
You can't.
Yeah, you can't do it. If you're ever starving and on the street, all you need to do is invest in one Riffs or Robotech book, walk past the restaurant of your choice, hold that book out, and a meal will come to it.
Now,
that's awesome.
All right. Now, on the topic of mechanical failure, just purely mechanical, nothing to do with store. We're talking just dice and numbers. I had a conversation years ago with Dave. Y'all remember Dave. He's the one who like kicks our ass in board games and all that sort of stuff. We had a very similar, just casual conversation about this. And I asked him, Dave, which would you rather have if you could choose this? You're going to fail. But if you fail, would you rather roll and miss or roll and do no damage or negligible amount, who cares, damage? And he said, I would rather roll, hit, and do no damage, because at least I've done something. Obviously, I've done nothing, because I've done no damage, but to my mind, at least I hit, at least I have that. And I can agree with that.
That I think is going to be one of my central tenets for this entire topic, is
a lot... Dave kicks our butt in board games.
Well, no. It is true, but that is not what we're here to discuss. Is the fact that a lot of this boils down to perception. Mm-hmm. Now, let me give you some examples here to say why I'm reducing this to perception. I want you to think about a couple different stories that I'm going to guess are pretty commonly known amongst the audience. Let's start with Lord of the Rings. How many things in that story go right? Especially if we're looking at the story as a whole here, prior to having gone wrong a whole lot. There's a lot. I'm not saying nothing positive happens in the story. It's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is this is a story about failure and setback and failure and setback and one poor choice after another. Heck, even the reason The Lord of the Rings is a story is told is because of the fact that they failed the previous war. Mm-hmm. They didn't learn the lesson and get rid of the ring. It is a story about failure. And at the end, Frodo, spoilers, falls victim to the ring. And
does the ship sink?
And ends up getting his finger torn off. That's the only reason he gets rid of it. But that's a story that ultimately ends in success. But that success is made so climactic and so powerful by all of the failures that frame it.
With that particular example, it's even more poignant that it's the success, the climactic success at the end of The Lord of the Rings is in itself a failure. I mean, Frodo failed to do what he went there to do.
Right.
And the only reason he succeeded was through that failure.
Let's use another example. The Dark Knight, the movie. It came out several years back. Here is a movie where Batman is at his height. Incredible fighters on top of his game. And yet the people around him are dying. Innocents are dying. And ultimately he has to do, while he doesn't give up and kill, he does have to do everything shy of that, including selling out many of his virtues and many of his moral lines in order to finally stop the Joker. And the Joker still wins, because despite being captured, he even said, look, my real goal here was to screw Gotham by getting Harvey Dent to fall. And he did. He got Harvey Dent to fall. They lose. Harvey Dent goes insane, goes on a killing spree, and ends up being killed. And they have to attempt to cover that up and lie, you know, which is not what...
Oh, by the way, spoilers.
Spoilers, yeah. If you haven't seen Dark Knight yet...
Too late.
Yeah, you should have seen it.
Seen a couple of years ago.
But
we've talked about this before.
Yeah, we have. We gave our limit on spoilers once before. But anyway, the point here being, though, what's different between that and, let's take, for example, the current situations that are going on in our own Sunday game right now. In our most recent game, the one that occurred between the two recordings, the group got caught out in an area where they're supposed to be posing as couriers, transferring a file to some enemies. Okay, now the real couriers had been intercepted, and I won't get into a huge gaming story here, but all of these different setbacks occur. A ship ends up kind of getting the jump on them, and then some unexpected other bad guys show up, and then the whole thing ends at the end of the gaming session. The bad guys got the file, they end up captured. This looks like failure, and some of the players have said that they felt kind of put back by that. Now, what's the difference? Because the campaign's not over. That's not the end of the campaign. Nobody was killed, much less a TPK, much less the campaign being shut down. But I think the difference is this. When you walk into a book or a movie, you know that there is a fixed, finite distance from A to B. And if you're familiar with the material or familiar with the author or familiar with the genre, you may not know exactly how it's going to end, but you do have a sense that there is going to be some kind of positive resolution near the end. Tolkien sets up repeatedly throughout Lord of the Rings the idea that everything that is occurring according to a plan, that even the worst people and the worst events are there for a purpose that will work out for a greater good. And in the end of the story, while not everybody walks away hunky-dory and without scars, the greater good is achieved. The cycle of evil is broken. At the end of Dark Knight, while Harvey Dent does fall, nonetheless, Batman still walks away free, is able to take on the moral burdens of Gotham, and his story continues. It is not an ending that is completely bleak. But I think when you sit down at a role-playing table, players have two things happen, or tend to have two things happen. One, they don't know exactly where that end is or what that end's going to look like, because of the fact that role-playing games don't often, particularly at the plot level, conform to genre as well as most other stories do. And secondly, it feels personal. When the Joker tells Batman, hey, you didn't disappoint, you let 5 people die, that's one character talking to another. When I say to Pat, Pat, you didn't disappoint, the files fell into the hands of the bad guy, now suddenly I'm saying, Pat, you screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
That's not exactly what happened. I'm just using this as a for example. Right. But the point here being that I think there is a perceptive difference in terms of how you experience those stories.
Yes, I agree with that. I think to sort of follow your literary analogy, I would almost say that the way that players, and I can speak certainly for myself, can react to that at the table and being in that story, not knowing where things are going. It's almost more like when you look at how the hobbits were reacting in the story throughout, there were a lot of times various of the hobbits felt that it was impossible. They didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it was like they bemoaned the fact of what they were doing and what have we gotten ourselves into. We're consistently running up against these failures, and we're not going to be able to succeed. So I can see that there. And I think that's what really, like it is, like what you said, for me, you know, we get in a situation where it's going along and it doesn't go right. And we have a failure, as it were, because we didn't get the optimal outcome out of it. That's going to happen. And I get that. And I don't have a problem with that in a role-playing game, but I'm still frustrated by it. And that's just the nature, I think, of human beings, is the fact that unless you have a really strange worldview, you don't enjoy failing in life. In normal things, like I don't like to be, say, at work and I screwed up and I got yelled at by my boss. I don't like that. Now, it's part of life and I learn from it, but I like to succeed at things. So that's my take on that. So that's what you're always looking for. So yes, there are stumbling blocks along the way, and I get that, and it does help the story build. But it's like you're saying, if it happens too much, I think if it's just one failure after another and there's never any time where we actually succeed at something, it does begin to be a little bit demoralizing, I think, at least is the big thing that I see.
You definitely can have too much failure in a game. Whether you're a game master or a player, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And, so did you say you can or can't?
You can. You absolutely can.
Yeah. I'm just making sure I heard you right.
No problem. And you failed at hearing me. So.
Yes, good job. And I'm frustrated by
you're
that.
You're frustrated. You're just like, and you flip the table over.
I did.
And,
we're actually on our second take of the episode. Pat stormed out on the first
episode. Right? Yeah. So yeah. I believe you can have too much success. There's a Twilight Zone episode where a guy dies and he goes to, well, we'll call it the afterlife, and everything is great. And everything's always coming up aces to him. And there's an example where all the good things are always happening all the time, every single time, no matter what. And he's starting to get frustrated by it. And the culmination, he like goes into a bar because he's kind of a hood type guy. And he goes up to the pool table. He loves playing pool. He does the first break and every single ball goes into every single pocket in order.
Yeah.
On the first break. And he realizes he ain't in heaven. He's in, as he says, the other place.
Yeah.
I believe you can have too much failure and you can have too much success. Personally, I like failure in a role-playing game. And the reason I like it is because I see it as opportunity. There's two kinds of opportunity that I see coming from failure. One is role-playing. Story, you know, there's failure, which gets characters talking to each other. Hey, wasn't that a big failure? What can we do next time? Let's make a plan. Or, oh, woe is me. Oh, failure. You know, however you want to role play that out amongst characters. The other kind is, why do we fail so that we can rise to the occasion? If I'm succeeding at everything, who cares? I'm just going to succeed at it. If there is legitimate hard failure there, my character may be upset about it, but I'm sitting there as a person thinking, holy crap, did that just go pear shape? How am I going to get out of this one? And my the wheels of my head are turning. And then I'm like talking out of character with it. It's like, how are we going to get out of this? This is so awesome.
Here's another simple thought exercise I think most people can relate to. I'd wager most people listening to this at some point have played a video game using heavy cheat codes. They've played through a video game on God mode, to borrow the old one from Doom. You know what? It's interesting to a certain extent because you kind of get to see the game and you get to do stupid stuff. You know, you get to go punch the boss to death as opposed to use a gun or whatever. But ultimately, it's boring.
Yeah. I remember when Doom first came out and we were playing it and we discovered, because this was kind of before the internet, we discovered you could put in cheat codes and you could do God mode and the character's eyes turn gold and stuff. And it was so awesome. And I remember loading the game up. I'm like, I'm going to start from the beginning and I'm going to do the whole game in God mode. And it's going to be so cool. Right. And that was about 15 minutes where I'm like, oh my God, this is boring.
Right.
The point of the game was one of risk and challenge and getting your heart rate up.
If there's no challenge, then there's really no reward in success. Mm. And if there is no failure, then I would posit either you are incredibly good at what you do, or there was no challenge. And I guess even then, if you're incredibly good at what you do, maybe I should...
Then there is no challenge.
Then there is no challenge. I should probably up it from there, you know.
Maybe, or play Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah, or play Ninja Gaiden or whatever.
On a power glove. Because I was just thinking, somebody's like, that's... I beat Ninja Gaiden. It's like... Trying to power glove, asshole.
But I also have to wonder if some of it comes from the player attitudes about their character. One of the things that we've talked about on the show is that for some people, there's a really, really strong line between in character and out of character. You know, IC and OOC. For some people, they can really separate, my character did this, not me. Now, I think in some cases, people are also lying and saying that in truth or being sociopathic. But there are people, though.
I do that all the time. I'm sorry, I guess I'm sociopathic, but well, I have a lot of separation.
No. I don't mean that. I mean, if you genuinely have the separation, what I was calling sociopathic is the people who are simply acting out their antisocial behaviors through their character and then saying, oh, I didn't say that. He did.
Gotcha.
To avoid responsibility.
We walk in. It's time for tea. I stab mom repeatedly with a knife. Oh, that wasn't me.
That was my character. My stuffed animal made me do it.
That's right.
And yeah, it's
no, I don't do that.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
At least I hope I don't. But if I start doing that, tell me.
But my point being,
if you start doing that, I'm calling the police.
But I've seen some people where they have outbursts through their character. I also seen people who really do have a pretty strong line between the character and themselves. They can look at their character and say, wow, this person is better than I am. They're worse than I am. I like them. I dislike them. I agree and disagree with them. Whatever. Something happens to my character. I don't care. It's my character, not me. There's other people that have a really strong buy-in where to them, what happens to their character
and who their character is. People who make the separation also have a really strong buy-in as well.
Well, sure. And I think there is no 100-0 here.
Sure.
I don't think there's any individual, you'd be pretty hard pressed to convince me of this, but I don't think there's anybody out there who's either 100% bought into their character or 100% separated from the character.
Right.
But I think when you look at kind of which way are you leaning, you certainly can get some people who are 90-10, where they are very heavily bought in versus very heavily separated. Then most people are going to fall somewhere along that curve in the middle. You know, I'd say I probably fall somewhere towards 60-40 of 60% bought in. I can separate myself somewhat from my character, but there are certain things where it happens and it upsets me. There are certain kinds of characters I can't play because playing them disturbs me too much.
And then you play a gnoll and you sing in character in voice.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
You
know, you got to do that hustle. For anyone's wondering, that did actually happen.
It was really hilarious.
It was about a gnoll who was posing as a troll and was in love. I don't remember what the story was. I made up the musical as it was going, and I had to keep giving Wayne and Beth their lines to sing.
And they weren't reading their lines fast enough. And I'm like, come on, guys, this is great.
The story stopped. But anyway, I think part of what you're going to see as well is for some people, when they fail, they can say, okay, my character failed. This is part of this character's life and this character's story. For other people, they're going to say, well, wait a minute. Ultimately, if you follow the marionette strings back, I'm controlling this character. I'm making the choices. I chose this when I should have chosen that. I failed. And they internalize it on a level that I think other players don't. Mm-hmm. And so failure is going to hit them a lot harder. And I'll back up in a second and give some advice for game masters. But my plea to those players would be to remember that good stories require stumbles before the win. Mm. I want to say one last thing on perspective before moving on to some of these other angles, which is I think sometimes players don't always see the bigger picture. Coming out of last Sunday's game, there are a couple of players that felt very defeated by the things that occurred. But the games that I run are very much about secret and intrigues. There's a lot of things that you guys don't know. And sometimes those are bad things. Sometimes you don't realize the people you're working with are actually out to get you or whatever. But sometimes that's the other way around. I can tell you right now, you guys succeeded without realizing it at a lot of things on Sunday.
And there were, coming out of that game on Sunday too, there were people who felt defeated and demoralized. And there were people who felt celebratory. And it was awesome. Not awesome failure, but it's just like, wow, did you see what we did? We did some really awesome stuff. We very, very consciously kept the group together as sort of a running joke through the game.
Against your best efforts, Chad.
I tried.
Oh, you did find
it's
split
funny.
Him at the end.
Well, it's funny because I have to joke. Since you mentioned it, I have to say this. It is sort of the running gag with Chad because the funny thing is that Chad's character is he's a tactics guy. He's like a small squad tactics character. So his whole shtick really is about, okay, I know
putting
the best way to,
you know,
we put these resources here, resources there. And logically, it means, well, we need some people over here and some people over here, which is splitting the party.
Yeah.
The problem is that every time we split the party, bad shit happens. And so I'm like, Chad,
opportunities for success happen.
I've got a different issue with splitting the party, which isn't bad things happen. It's
a headache for the GM.
It's a headache for the GM because I have to keep track of where
it was. A small ship.
They're doing.
True. Yeah, but so that's the joke, the inside of the joke. But yes. And I always try my best to not split the party because of that. Like you're saying, Dan, it's a hassle. It can be very challenging. And also for the players, it's like, well, if half of you guys are over here and something goes wrong, the other half can't really come and help you. And then it's just like, oh, bad things happen. But anyway,
opportunities for success.
Opportunity knocks. Yes. Yeah. For you. That's for what? One man's headache is another Chad's, you know, wet dream.
Well, what my wet dream and my point was, though, is that in our group, how many people do we have in our group? Minus you. Six players?
Six players.
Half of them were like, yes, success and awesomeness. And the other half were like defeat and demoralization. And both opinions were true. And both opinions were legitimate. It's just that we have a diversity of perspectives. I think that goes back to your point, Dan. Success and failure is a matter of perspective. Because I was sitting here thinking, it's like you said, you know, World War II ended on a high note, but a lot of bad shit happened, you know, with Japan stuff. Well, if you're Japanese, World War II kind of ended on a down note. But you know what? It got a lot better.
Yeah, look at where Japan went after the war.
Exactly.
Became one of the world's largest economies, became a very... Yeah.
But then older people in Japan might say they gave up so much. And
right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Precisely.
You know, it's all perspective.
Precisely, yeah. This is not an issue that I think can be solved entirely by either party. As I said before, I place it upon the players to try and see this in the perspective of this is a story. Not everything is going to work out our way. But let me place some burdens on the game master. Number one, I'm a big believer game masters need to be fair. If your party got something and they succeeded and they did it right, don't take that away from them. Don't give the bad guys magical powers. And I mean this in the abstract sense, not the Vancian sense, but don't give the bad guys these meta plot powers by which the party cannot succeed no matter how well they do, no matter how good they are. Game masters, that is cheating, plain and simple.
Yeah, whether you're using rules to do it or you're using story to do it.
Yeah, where they followed the clues, they got to the MacGuffin, and when they open the box, it's not there, even though by all rights and in your notes, it says it's there. To me, I think that's just kind of cheating. Try to write a game that is consistent, that is fair, and if the party is solving it too easily, no problem. Start upping your game. Make the challenges harder. Make the plots more obscure. Start asking some of your fellow gamers for advice on how to make them work a little bit harder for what they get without cheating them from the things they deserve. Because nothing, at least for me, is more frustrating as a player than knowing damn well I got it and being told you didn't get it.
But Dan, where would I go for advice on game mastering? I have no idea. I've never heard of such a thing.
Penthouse.com.
Excellent. Now,
Penthouse. What an awesome penthouse letter.
Somebody write Penthouse for gaming advice. And if they respond, we will read this on the show.
Penthouse. I never believed this would happen to me.
So my party
was the level 6 wizard, and
my party wanted to
20s.
Be all bards. I never thought it would happen to me, but...
I may actually start writing now. I finally found something I could sink my teeth in.
With the rule system, I love games that give you a chance to buy off your problems. And I don't mean buy them all off. Okay? I don't mean you never have anything bad happen to you. For example, in Battletech, the Edge system. In Fate, the Fate chips. In Savage Worlds, the Benny system.
In any game that Dan runs... Ding dongs and ho hos.
Ding dong.
The crocodiles. Crocodiles is the big one.
I've got one.
Yeah, you
left.
Know what? I agree with you. And just thinking about what you just said, if we had an edge or a Benny or something like that, I would have used.
You do.
I would have used them a couple.
I probably need to explain how they work.
Yeah, I guess I don't understand.
We're playtesting
what,
a system.
Yeah,
so
I don't understand what
how they work,
but
you
our
do.
Chips are.
So
but.
The perception barrier. I know I have bennies and I never use them because I don't want to get out of problems.
No, and that's totally fine. So yeah, once again, it's totally
fine.
Know,
it's,
but I think
it's
you could, in a system, you can have something that kind of abrogates that level of failure you can't control. You had no hand in by saying, look, you at least get a certain amount of rerolls or a dice pool you can draw from or something. Now, I realize not every game system allows for that. Some folks may be willing to house rule. Some folks may say, no, the rules stand as they are. I get that. It's just a recommendation. It's not, you know, hard and fast way of fixing the problem.
I am totally going to buy a box of Chocodiles and not give them to you, but I'm going to give them to you one at a time.
So good luck finding
good
them.
Good luck.
Especially now, I think beforehand, you probably, because they were Hostess. So
and they weren't even distributed out here.
You had to get them online.
When Hostess went out of business, I managed to get a whole crap load of boxes from somebody on Amazon.
Somebody might make them again, but I don't.
A Chocodile is a stale Twinkie covered in bad chocolate.
Actually, it's the other way around. It is a Twinkie covered in chocolate that's not stale because the chocolate actually keeps it from going stale.
That's what it tastes like.
It may taste that way to me. All right. But anyway.
But then again, cilantro tastes like soap to me because I'm a super taster. So,
Lottie freaking da.
Believe me, it's not a blessing.
We'll put you on CSI now. Anyway, the other thing that I would put on the Game Master is to be aware of how your players are feeling. One of the things that I mentioned last episode is that I let the party off easier than the internal consistency of the world said I should have because of the fact that I was worried if I didn't, I would give some of the players too much of a sense of defeat. I would frustrate them. I would endanger the future of the campaign. And I know this because of the fact that I've seen it happen in my games in the past. I'm good at writing complexity, but the trap that I fall into on my own too often is that, yeah, there's sense to the complexity, and eventually you'll find it all out. But if eventually is 3 to 6 months from now, you just get frustrated because you spend 3 to 6 months confused, out of your mind, feeling like you're stabbing in the dark, you're never winning. And so the players, even if in truth they are marching boldly towards a glorious future, the way that they perceive the game, the way that they feel, is that they are just wallowing around in the mud, blind, deaf, and mute.
Yeah.
And that's something that I would put on Game Masters is, look, if you look at your party and you've just been kicking their butt 10 ways to Sunday, and that is starting to bother them, then give them a success somewhere in there. Let them defeat one of the big bad lieutenants. Let them accomplish it. Let them save a village.
And but
I was going to say, I don't even think it has to be one of the big bad lieutenants.
But
just a victory.
Here's the thing. If
trivial.
If very important thing with that. And if you haven't listened to any piece of advice for this whole show, for the entire run of the show, as a game master, please listen to this one piece of advice.
Always cheat on your dice.
Dan's suggestion is a good one. You are throwing your players a bone. Do not let them know you are throwing them a bone.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's worthless.
It's not a victory.
It's not a victory. Right. It's like...
It's pity.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I have been in games where that's happened. Mm-hmm. You know, this may seem really, really obvious, but if you're a game master, the temptation is, you know, I've got this complex plot and it's all cool and stuff, a lot of moving parts, but everyone's feeling a bit demoralized. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw the big bad lieutenant. Whatever they need to feel good about themselves and to keep going. And you arrange that and they throw it and you pull it off and it's awesome. Well, what's the first thing you want to do when you do something awesome? You want to tell everybody about it. And go to your grave with it. Like I said, it sounds very obvious, but I have been in games, multiple game masters, where this has happened.
You're absolutely right, because if they know you gave it to them, or you do just very obviously give it to them, then no, it's not a success. It's
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's pity. It is. You're absolutely right. It's pity.
One thing I would add is if you are the type of game master that actually plans out the plot in advance, put stuff like this in, include it.
That's a good idea.
Make micro goals that the players can achieve. So as the plot progresses, you have built in spots that they go, yes, we've been chasing this guy for ages and we got him. And yes, that guy leads on to, oh, well, it turns out he was just working for this other guy and now you need to deal with that. And it, you know, is not a complete success for them, but at least they get that chunk of victory that is built into your plot.
That goes back to sort of the book, or to the story example, like Lord of the Rings. We as readers know that there, like you said, there's a finite ending way over here at the end of the third book. Mm-hmm. We assume that it's going to be a good one. You know, because, again, for me, I don't like to read stories that have unhappy endings or bad endings, because that's not my entertainment. I don't want to read a book that ends with everybody dying.
Never read anything I've written.
There are people are that do. I was gonna say when you're reading that book, and certainly as the game master, like you just said, you know your plot, you know your story, you know right. the story arc you're wanting to tell, you know where it's going to end. So you might think it's all great to have multiple failures after one after another until finally they have the big ending at the end.
Yeah.
Because you know where it is.
Yeah.
But we don't as the guys sitting around the table.
Unthink that if you
so
think
it's like,
that.
So yeah, it's like we're sitting around going, I have no idea where we are. Have we just begun? Are we 75% there? I don't know. We just keep failing.
I have completely fallen victim to that as a game master.
That is a very strong point is, yeah, you know, you've got to have it in there and, so that there are the little victories mm-hmm. here and there just to keep you wanting to keep going.
And something else to consider, we keep going back to this analogy about reading a novel, and you know that there's an end to this novel that you're going to get to, and it's going to be a good ending. As gamers, we don't always know that there is an end right. to this campaign. I can honestly say that 95 to 99% of the campaigns I have ever played in did not come to an end.
Right.
You know,
they just kind of broke up.
It just disappeared. And so you can't count on that. You're there for the sessions. Sure. You know, you're not there necessarily for that climatic ending that you are in the novel.
Have any of you guys ever run or played in a game that had a non-successful, non-happy ending?
Yes.
Was it good?
Maybe.
Was it bad on the merits that it was failure or was it just a crap game?
It was bad on the merits of failure. Mm. I mean, pretty much every time I have had that happen, it was mechanical failure. Mm-hmm. Big climatic battle, huge fight with the big bad, and you roll ones and the bad rolls 20s. TPK. Well, it's been a good 2 years, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, see, that's an important distinction. Have I been in one shots that have done that? Absolutely. You've run them. Yeah. Very good ones.
Silent Memories. The very first Silent Memories.
I loved it. Yeah. It's a one shot, and that's mm-hmm. cool. Have I been in a long, like a multiple month, like 6 month to 2 year campaign that did? No. And my God, I would never want to. I would hate to end a long running campaign on a, you fail.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can think of multiple campaigns that have ended negatively, but I can only think of one where it was a negative ending that was good from a
storytelling
standpoint. Yeah. From a storytelling perspective, most of the games I've been in that ended poorly, that ended in defeat, when the people walked away from the table, they did not feel better about it. In fact, a lot of times there were hurt feelings that had nothing to do with the characters anymore. People were angry at each other, angry at the GM, whatever the case may be. I mean, some of these stories we've told before, the Drive to Chicago story, my first character death, where the game master later admitted he cheated to kill me.
Oh, wow.
But I can think of one, which is Chad. Some years back, we played a sci-fi campaign where you were playing the pit fighter, mm-hmm. I was playing the soldier, Tim was playing the alien, and Paul was playing a sort of human spec ops kind of guy. It's a little bit hard to explain what he was exactly. And
I think Tim was the only one who survived.
No, I was the only one that survived.
Oh, yeah.
Tim died.
Yeah, that's right.
I pulled his life support.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pulled Tim's life support in the middle of that game because of the fact that, and it was a huge character moment. It was a great character mm-hmm. moment. Your character from the start, you kind of even laid out, this is how I want him to die. He's mm-hmm. his end is a failure that basically encapsulates the fact that he had massive character flaws. Mm-hmm. And I mean flaws in his person, not character sheet flaws, but he had massive character flaws that were going to culminate in his effective self-destruction. Mm-hmm. He was going to put
the character was on a downward spiral, and it was not part of the character or how he was play him to pull up and redeem him. He was going to hit the ground.
Paul's character,
that's what I wanted out of it,
ironically, was actually killed by himself. Mm-hmm. He was actually, because we were doing rotating game master thing on it, and actually Paul was running the game when two fighters kind of strafed us, and one of them killed his own character, mm-hmm. and he took it. Mine was the only character that survived that campaign, and at the end of it,
alone and broken.
Well, I wasn't alone, because at the point, we had convinced some people, it's kind of this rabble crowd to join us in this cause. We had this raggedy ass fleet, but there was some sense that there's a way forward. Mm-hmm. The campaign ended there, but you had the sense that there could have been another book in the series where we pick up with how this character and his raggedy ass fleet of unlikely heroes actually goes to do greater things. Mm-hmm. But it ended nonetheless with one guy alive, but really not in a great position, and three people outright dead, and a lot of things that we had worked for had been lost. Mm-hmm. But to Johan's point, along the way, we'd had ton of micro successes. Mm-hmm. There were villains that had popped up and been defeated. There were MacGuffins that we were chasing that we had gotten. There were goals we'd set for ourselves in terms of character development, in terms of things we wanted to see change in culture or politics or whatever that had come about. There were all these
pretty epic spanning.
Yeah, it was scope, a very big epic story. But there were all these things that we accomplished along the way that I think still gave it a very satisfying feeling. We didn't have the sense at the end that really we were just coming out of the game abused.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's the thing. I think you can have a long-running campaign end in what is, by definition, failure if it isn't random. You're walking along, rocks fall, everybody dies, because I don't care. That's f-ing lame. The random TPK is stupid. But you have those micro successes along the way, and it weaves a very good story. In spite of what people may think, satisfaction does not come from the success in a role-playing game. Satisfaction comes from a really good story where you bonded with not the characters, but the players around the table, because everybody came together and told this really awesome story. And a really awesome story that really binds people together, really binds friends together, can be one of success or failure. As long as the story's good, and as long as you had fun doing it, and as long as everyone around the table binds together and comes together in some way.
Here's a distinction I want to try to make or to ask, and this is going to go out to the GMs here.
No, get out.
Who are you?
There's a window. Go.
I accept one under.
I accept
one other host under protest.
But what I was, so with what you're talking about is this, and I, to me, this would be an important distinction. Mm-hmm. As a GM talking about a long-standing campaign that you say it would be okay if it ended in failure. Mm-hmm. My question is this: as a GM, when you plan out, when you think about the ultimate battle, the culmination of everything, would you plan it hoping that your players would succeed or hoping that they would fail? And I guess what I mean by that is I'm going to make this battle so bastardly hard that if they make one mistake, they're going to fail. That kind of thing. Because I can understand if you're going down through it and we're in the big battle and a lot of the characters, they start dying. And I mean, that I can even accept that if it's last. But if you've done it so hard, it's like I'm hoping that they will fail.
Well, because
that's, to me, that's a distinction.
Why does the end of a role playing game have to end in a battle?
Well,
that's an easy example.
The thing is that whether it's a story or a mechanical battle or whatever, the end comes about, and either it's a positive ending or it's a downbeat ending. Am I trying to influence it one way or another? Well, that's a hard question to ask because there's a lot of factors going into it.
I appreciate that. I'm just trying to get big picture.
All right. But let's imagine I'm running a game for you and five people that are exactly like you.
Okay.
You know, just again, this total ass pull example here.
Uh-huh.
I would do everything I can to make the game have a happy ending and be successful and not have a failure ending, because I know that the group, who is actually just five clones of you, is not into that.
Furthermore, I would go so far as to say if I were to be GMing a game that had one Pat and five Chads, mm-hmm. I would still plan it for success.
Yes, because
success. Chad does not have a problem with success.
Right, but not failure. Everybody is
right.
Chad.
Right.
Now, yes. Pat, let me split a few hairs on things you said, and I think your question's valid, and I don't think you meant these things.
Probably not. It's hard to express, right. And I'll clarify if I can.
No, right, and the reason I want to clarify this.
I know what I'm trying to get across here, but
right.
Whatever.
And the reason I want to clarify this is for the sake of the audience at home,
yes,
who's also hearing these answers, but when I sit down to write a game, I do not write out the ending specifically, because I think to do so, and I don't think you were implying otherwise.
Yeah, no.
But I think to do so really robs the game of its organic
absolutely.
Flow. Absolutely. Because if I know you guys are going to win and how it's going to happen, well, then apparently I know all points between the beginning
and
end.
Yeah, that's not
why. Why don't I just hand you a
but
novel?
Like I said, you know how you
but certainly
know.
I do have an intention.
You've got ideas. Sorry.
When I sit down to write a game, I've got a particular idea in my head, or kind of a, something I'm picturing, this collection of scenes or cool ideas that I want to stitch together into a plot. So if I'm kind of running this background mental process where I'm saying, okay, in the reality of the boots on the ground in the game, we're going to let this play out and see what happens. But if you were to ask me, what is my subconscious desire? In every game I can think of I have ever run, I am rooting for the players to win. I do not want you guys to fail. Now, failure could happen. And yes, failure and complication will occur along the way. But my dream for every campaign I run is I want the party to pull off an underdog victory.
We're on the same wavelength, right. Now, 100%.
I won't engineer that.
Right.
Right. I won't engineer that. There have been times in my games where parties have failed when I didn't want them to. And there's been times in my games where parties have succeeded when I didn't want them to. And I'm not going to change that. I'm not going to take that away from them. But my desire is to see the party succeed. And as a result, one of the things that, and I totally understand why players feel frustrated when they don't see those successes. They just feel lost or confused or defeated. But one thing that I would hope my players, especially those that have been playing with me for a while, would come to understand is this is headed somewhere. Mm-hmm. This is not going to end with us confused and abused and defeated. This is going to end with us having the vast majority of our questions answered, maybe not all, but the vast majority answered. And we are going to come out on top in some way. You know, we are going to get the ring into the volcano one way or another.
Right.
In all probability. And what happens from there is, of course, the joy of game mastering. I don't have complete control over it, but I certainly do have some control because I can set the stage. I can set the stats of the enemies. I can set what conundrums occur. I can decide whether an enemy holds out or breaks down and gives you the codes. You know, there are things that I can control along the way to sort of keep that on track. But I think what Chad and Johan said is absolutely correct, that ultimately what I have to do is present something that is enjoyable to the group. And if I know going into it that a dramatic failure is not going to go over well with some players, that's not an option. Mm-hmm. Because my number one goal as a game master is the same goal that everyone at the table should have, which is, back to Chad, to tell a compelling story that brings people together. I mean, this is a shared storytelling tradition where maybe the rules have only popped up within the past 40, 50, whatever years. Yeah. But the concept of storytelling to inspire people and encourage people and draw people together and all that kind of stuff and evoke emotion and blah, blah, blah is as old as human speech is. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I want out of a role-playing game.
And I would be interested to hear from all the other GMs out there, like what their thought is on that, because I would think, I would hope actually that most people fall sort of in that camp of, generally speaking, at the end of it all, we're rooting for the players. We hope that they will succeed. Because that's what I was trying to get at with this chat. It's like, what is, you know, what is your mindset in that? I mean,
I don't think that I root for my players. Uh-huh. I want them to succeed. I have a big bad guy that I really love, and they punch him in the face. I'm like, yeah, get that guy. Mm-hmm. But whether the ending is upbeat or downbeat isn't a matter of if I'm rooting for the players or not, because I don't see a downbeat or negative ending, if it's good and if it's a good part of the story, as me punishing the players or me rooting for the players to lose because I feel some negativity toward them. Again, I want to make a story that everybody is telling. It's not my story. Yeah. It's this collaboratively built
certainly
story.
I would agree.
And it,
personal preferences aside, there is a big difference between a tragic story mm-hmm. and an adversarial GM player relationship.
Right.
If you have an adversarial GM player relationship, you have a crappy game.
Exactly.
Look, game master, if you want to prove you can beat the players, just say the roof collapses and they're all dead. It's within your power to do. Go ahead and get it out of your system. It's done. Now let's get on to an actual game.
Yeah.
But I do agree, even though I personally do not prefer them, that it is possible to end a game with a tragic ending that is nonetheless satisfying and compelling to everyone that is involved. I mean, some of the most powerful stories of our age, you know, of our entire human history are tragic stories. Look at the story of Samson. Mm-hmm. Look at the story of Hamlet. Mm-hmm. You know, how many stories are there?
Oh, God, Othello.
Yeah.
I love Othello. I can't watch it. It's too damn tragic.
And there are all these very powerful stories that have these very, very tragic endings. Mm-hmm. But the question is that what the people at your table want to experience? Because once again, as an issue of perception, some people, when they look at it, it's not these characters failed. Yeah. It's not Hamlet failed. It's not, Samson screwed up. It's I screwed up.
Yeah.
I failed.
See, that's
and I think it also depends on how much I've invested in it. Yeah. I think a tragic story is great in a small dose setting, like either a one shot or a small game that's maybe going to take a couple sessions, two or three sessions, whatever. I don't have a problem with that at all. But again, I don't want to tragically fail at the end of a campaign that we've been playing for a year or something like that. See, because this, to me, that's just different than the fact that I hate to have, these characters, I've invested so much in them and I've wanted them to succeed. And then at the end of it all, we failed. That's the level of distinction, I guess, for me is I wonder.
That's why I like collaborative character creation and collaborative world building, because all of this gets put on the table. And everybody kind of builds up this world and this story together. And so people can build in failures and successes and good things and bad things into the story. Like Dan, the gnolls in the game we made. You made this gnoll society. I didn't have anything to do with its creation at all. You made this gnoll society. And as we talked about and talked about it, we kind of came to it's unsustainable. It's one of two things is going to happen with Null Society. Either they're going to all rise up and kill all the humans, or they're going to basically peter out and, be crushed by the humans when they kind of scatter and aren't as organized. Character was built into that because your character saw that and was trying to...
He was Sisyphus.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, he was trying to, let's make it to where this is a possible thing to where this impossible thing can happen.
And that's what he was trying to do. Yeah, and should he have succeeded... Yeah. And I don't know, maybe someday we'll pick that character up and continue that story. Yeah. But should he have succeeded, it would have been one of those things that historians years later would look back and say, this is the most unlikely thing in history. Right. It should not have worked. But yeah, through most of the campaign, he was basically playing the role of Sisyphus of trying to get these monsters to behave like something other than monsters without
trying to sell themselves out.
Yeah, without selling themselves out in the process.
And it was impossible. But that was
highly unlikely. And in fact, there was a lot of things along the way where it was some unbelievably impressive die rolls. I mean, that was a D&D game, and there were many 19s and 20s I busted out when I needed them to keep that group together and to keep things growing. And there was a lot of side work I had to do to get rid of people that, whether through violence or cultural encroachment or whatever, were predating the society, were attacking this society.
See, and that's what was cool about it. And again, this is why I love collaborative games. Pat, you built a society that was sustained and endured for millennia and that really could sustain and endure itself for millennia. And the only thing that was going to stop it was that it would crush itself from the inside. There was a lot of opportunity there. You were not Sisyphus. There was a lot of opportunity that a one leader could rise up and be the big damn hero and take over everything. And that's kind of the path you were on. And that was really cool. And so you can have these sort of melding of tragedy and non-tragedy. And not that Dan wants tragedy all the time, but in that particular story, again, it was pushing a bit rock up a really big hill. It was nearly impossible.
Well, and I think that what's important to talk about too is really we're talking about the examples we're looking at are individual characters.
Right.
Like you can have players that like to play tragic characters. Chad, you love to play tragic characters. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. What you have to realize is probably not everybody in the group is playing tragic characters.
Totally, so it's understand
like
that.
You don't want to look, it's like what we've said all along. Mm-hmm. You don't want to decide that it's going to be a tragic campaign because there's one tragic character in there and everybody else is really hoping that we'll succeed.
But that,
but you can put that in and it is great to have that in
there.
That's
why
I said, it adds so much to the story as a whole to have.
And that's
tragedy.
Why I like the collaborative world building beyond just, collaborative character making. Cause Dan made this aspect of the world that was an integral part of the plot that did not necessarily have a positive end to it. But you did. You did make a world that was, it was quite evil, but it was cool evil. And it had a future. It could keep going and such. And that was part of the world, and that was part of the plot, and that was part of the story. And I don't think that you necessarily, because a role-playing game is a story that is made by multiple people, the game master and all the players making a story together, coming together, and making a story. The end of the game does not have to be one end. It does not have to be, okay, you fight the big bad and he either eats you or he does not and you kill him. And that's either plus or minus game over.
Yeah.
I think that despite of all the stuff that we've said over the past hour, there's a lot of shades of gray in that. You can have an ending of a story. There's maybe not quite 50 shades of gray. But there's ways of making the ending tragic and positive and focused on the different characters and stuff. I ran a Battletech game many, many years ago where that happened, where they were a garrison on a planet and there was an invasion force. And the whole plot was defending the planet. But that's not really what the story was about. Oh. That was a major part of the story. And that part of the story, they kicked those guys off the planet and they won. There were a lot of scars and bumps along the way and a lot of damaged people. And we went through and we went and we did the aftermath of each individual character. And there was a guy who ended up in an insane asylum. There was the woman who loved him, who searched the galaxy for him to try and find out what insane asylum he was in to rescue him, even though he really was crazy. And then there's people who went back home to their family and lived a normal life. And then, you know, and on and on.
Mm-hmm. One thing that just sprang to mind as a possible approach when you have a group that has differing outlooks on failure, if you have one Chad and five Pats, then what you might...
It's a terrible ratio.
You're right. It would be much better with six Pats. But
yes. Sexier, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So something that comes to mind as a possible solution for that would be differing character goals, even contradictory mm-hmm. character goals. So you give the Chad a different personal character goal mm-hmm. than the Pats have. And it's basically understood. Chances are, Chad, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
You know, you will not succeed in reaching this goal, but this is something that your character is going to be striving for the entire time. So he gets his tragic story built directly into the successes of all the Pats.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That comes in when the players make very good characters with very detailed backgrounds and very detailed emotions and personalities, and they can really get in and play them.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the game, that gives the game master stuff to work with so that he can weave all of these plots and subplots. Because, I mean, that's the big thing here. With all the advice is kind of like there's one plot and it's going to have a plus or minus ending. And that's not
that really is how, what we focus on, but
yeah,
I,
and that's again, not really how games go.
It's an example. I was using that as a very sort of
you kick in the door, you kill the lich,
you know.
Oh, and you steal his stuff.
You steal his stuff. Yeah,
but you know, you're going to the extreme
just
to make the example, to make the point, really.
Yeah.
But perfect. Yes, no, what you're saying is I think we have to be honest. Most times campaigns don't end because they end before they end.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
people get bored.
If you're lucky enough to get to the end of a campaign, it's probably going to be more like what you're saying, Chad.
Yeah.
We have the big battle or the big story the big ending, whatever battle. It is.
Yeah, let's go
and then
back.
There's an aftermath. There's a postlude.
Let's end
but
this
something,
one.
But sometimes there's not.
We can end this one where we started. Let's look at Tolkien's story, Lord of the Rings. How many endings does that story have?
Too many.
Not enough.
But the point being, though, you have one ending for Aragorn where he goes on to be king and gets the woman he loves. You have a very different ending for Frodo where he goes off as a broken person to basically find a place to rest and live out the remainder of his days. Every character has a different kind of ending to that story.
Sam gets the only female hobbit in existence.
Yeah. But even though the overall plot arc of the ring being destroyed is done and resolved. Yeah. So. All right, I think we're going to wrap this one up. As always, check the show notes. We'll have a bunch of links out there, if nothing else, at least explaining our Orson Welles jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And fearthecon.com, you certainly want to check that out and join us here at the top of May for that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Can of peas.
Green peas.
Beyond that, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.